And a good afternoon to you. Thank you for being with us. Glad to have you on a Monday afternoon. Appreciate the goodness of the Lord. Been a beautiful weekend. 81 degrees outside right now. Clear skies. Nothing on the radar to talk about. And so, all right. Looking good. Looking good. Again, thank you for being with us. Thank the Lord for His mercy and grace here on the 20th day of June, year of our Lord, 2022. All right. Well, thank you so much for being with us. Thank the Lord for His mercy. Hope you had a good weekend, and we give God glory for all that He is doing. Let me first go to the travel. It's not bad. It's just thick. Starting at the airport, it is thick traffic on I-26 heading westbound. That continues. Of course, the traffic is shifting back and forth in all kind of directions. You're on the one side of the road for a good ways, then you switch over, get to the French Broad River, you're back on the old bridge. So it's complicated, and there's very few places to pull over. There's no shoulders much. So how do you know? I just came from there. And so it's off the pace, thick traffic, but it's moving. And that's from the airport to beyond the parkway today. The other direction, off just a little bit between 146 and 280. So it's not bad, but it's just busy for a Monday afternoon. This is a federal holiday. We'll say something about that just in a moment. Looking at the 191, it's got plenty of traffic on it today heading north. And then Sardis Road is in good shape. I came around. I chose the interstate. I had to go to Canton, and so I just came around and made it home okay, no issues. 25A look better than usual. 280 is busy between 26 and 25, but everything else is in pretty good shape, all right? Not a whole lot to comment about. Even in the downtown, things are in pretty good shape for a Monday. Again, it is a federal holiday, and some folks observing it, others not. Let me go to our newest federal holiday, by the way. Let me go right quick and tell you where the tree trimmers are. The tree trimmers are on 64, and they are cutting in there between, I was trying to give you a destination where they are. They're in there in the neighborhood, well, for lack of a better place, Brightwater Farm Estates, right in that section. Yeah, they're in Brightwater. How about that? Brightwater Heights, that's where they are. And, of course, they're moving down 64, cutting right away. And it's pretty good delay when you go through there. It may take you an extra 5 minutes to get through all that. It backs up a pretty good ways before they turn it loose. But I still have to say they're doing a good job trimming the trees. They're not maiming them. They look good, you know. They look good, and so we're glad for that. And this is the week, believe it or not. Yeah. And again, we'll see. This is the week they're supposed to finish the new roundabout on 64 that has it closed there at the Coosa Credit Union in Pisgah Forest. It's scheduled, as it stands right now, the 24th day of June to open, which would be Friday. So we shall see. And we'll see how that goes. Dropping off the mountain, even I-85 is better than normal. We got the normal slowdowns on 85 southbound around the airport. Outside of that, things are looking good in Greenville. Well, again, not a lot to talk about weather-wise. 84 was the 5 o'clock report at Asheville, and it felt like 82, so a little bit of a gust of breeze. Actually made it feel a little cooler than it actually was. In Spartanburg, pretty warm, 88, but again, the breeze made it feel like only 85 because the humidity also down to only 27%. So different than last week. We had a very hot and a very humid air mass over us, and so that feels like temperature was much higher than the actual. Today, with 30% humidity in Asheville, we're actually getting a little bit of a benefit. If you stay out of the sun, it's not bad. Yeah, little breeze, low humidity, don't feel as hot as it is. Yeah, so that's a good thing. All right, weatherman says this warm weather is going to continue and get hotter. Yeah, today we're feeling, you know, seasonal. Tomorrow, 90. Wednesday, 94. And again, if that hits that, That's going to be one of the warmest forecasts I've ever given for the mountains. I don't ever remember giving a higher temperature than that. I think that will tie it if for me, I don't remember it, and I've been doing this for 34 years, yeah, maybe, something like that. So since 87, however long that is. Anyway, we're, so 94 Wednesday, 90 Thursday, and you start getting a little chance of some rain back on Thursday evening. If you've been waiting for a time to stain your deck, to roof your house, now that's going to be brutal as far as the temperatures are concerned. You know, cutting hay, if you've not cut hay yet, something that requires some dry time, even pressure wash, you know, your driveway, let it dry so you can put sealant on it. All those things that require dry conditions, you won't get much drier than this is. The dry humidity, which cuts down on your moisture in the mornings, cuts down on the fog, cuts down on the dew, and also almost no chance of a shower until Thursday evening. So, yeah, a dry few days. We don't get many of those in the mountains, but this is kind of the western temperatures, the western front moving in here that's been killing cattle and everything else. It's coming into here, and we're going to be either the victim or beneficiary of it, whichever way you want to look at it, okay? It cools off, but the humidity comes up. So I don't know if you're going to benefit that much from it cooling off or not. 87 Friday, but with the precipitation moving up, the chance of showers does too. Over the weekend, mid-80s is what we're looking at, but a chance of shower every day and night through next Monday, starts on Thursday and Thursday night, sunshine Friday and Friday night, clear Friday night, and then a chance of showers Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. So, yeah, good time to stain that deck or whatever you were going to do there. All right. Listener's portion today of the general operating budget is being sponsored by Ray and Glenda McCall. It's in honor of their wedding anniversary, also in honor of their pastor, Lanny Cobb, and his wife, Judy, at the Carolina Baptist Tabernacle. And we appreciate the McCall family. And I've known Brother Lanny Cobb for a very long time and love and appreciate him and appreciate the folks at the Carolina Baptist Tabernacle. And they're sweet folks, and I've preached for him in the past, and they are very thoughtful, and they remember us, and they even send us a gift every now and then personally, and I really appreciate that. Appreciate the Cobbs. We salute them today. Network budget sponsored by Marie Ramoth, and it's in thankfulness for the 9th anniversary of her salvation. She's thankful for all that God has done for her. And we say amen. 9th anniversary, 9 years old today in the Lord. Marie, happy birthday and anniversary there on getting saved. Birthdays today include David Carter, who turned 70, Mary Lou Cannon, also Barbie Johnson having a birthday today. And it was, let me think about it a second. I can do this. It was 43 years ago today. Long about a little after to about 2:30, if I'm remembering correctly, that my wife and I delivered a baby girl and named her Shanna Maureen, and she is 43 today. She was actually born on her due date. You believe that? Born on her due date, exactly. And so, yeah, and so. Salutes to my daughter, Shanda, today. She is a joy and a blessing, and appreciate her very much. Let me give you a heads up, okay? If you listen today and you are interested, let's talk about inheritance. And when I'm talking about inheritance, what I'm going to be talking about is things you can do to protect inheritance. And so I'm talking to two different groups. I'm talking to moms and dads, grandparents, who have property, and they're concerned about protecting their property for the future generations. And then on the other side, I'm talking about kids who have an elderly parent who maybe have not made preparations. What can be done? So I'm going to go through some things with you. You probably want a pen and paper. You probably want to write down some notes. Okay, so I'm going to run through that here in just a minute. All right, we're looking today, let me alphabetize my cities so I don't repeat them over and over. Benton, Berryville. Berryville's in Arkansas. Benton's in Illinois, by the way. Berryville's in Arkansas. Brevard, El Monte, Fort Mill. I believe they get the award for the most listeners today. Gordon, Nebraska, which is probably on the reservation there of the Lakota Sioux. Grand Falls, New Brunswick, Canada. Sounds like a beautiful place. Greenville, Greer, Lancaster. Listen to this one. Matthias. It may be Matthias, but I don't know which way to say it. If it's Matthias or Matthias, West Virginia. Yeah, Matthias. I've never heard of that. Morrisville and North Attleburg, Massachusetts. Ottawa, Ontario, Canada. Pocatello, Idaho. Rock Hill, South Carolina, comes right in behind Fort Mill, and that's the same group listening. Appreciate them. San Jose, California, Silva, North Carolina. We've got Europe on board, and Weaverville rounds out the alphabetical list this afternoon. Glad to have you with us, and we do appreciate very much, we appreciate so much you being with us this afternoon. Let me go to the text line, 6751. Do you recall a message called, Then Came Amalek? If so, do you know who preached it? I'd like information if possible. Thank you. I don't, but I tell you how you can find it. If you'll open our app, almost everything on the Pulpit Hour is on the preaching channel. So what you do is you open your ABN app on your phone. You say, well, I don't have the ABN app. Well, get it. Yeah, it's free. And we spent a lot of time and money developing that thing, and it's available on Android or Apple. It's also available for your television. Yeah, you can on Amazon Fire, Roku, Apple TV. Yeah, available on all those. Once you go into you go into the app, you'll see the four screens. It says radio, music channel, preaching channel, video channel. You can either go down to the bottom and hit preaching, or you can go up to the left. Well, and I'm wrong. You go down to the bottom. So let me do it. And that way I won't miss it. Okay. So let me see if I can make mine quit it here. And I put the wrong one, and it won't go away. So let me tap it and see if I can make it quit. Okay. So we go down to preaching, hit the star on the bottom, and if we were to go down to the preaching channel, there should be somewhere a opportunity for you to search. If you touch on the preaching channel on demand, all right, so we are, and I'm trying to figure out how to search it, but there's a way of doing it. You can search the preaching channel, and you should be able to find any of those. So if we touch messages and we click on that one, and we were to, I can't find the search button. Anyway, it's a way that you may be able to find that message, but glad you asked. We'll get Sheetrock to work on that for me, all right? 4412 says, God bless Israel, Pastor Barton, and Anchor Broadcasting, and appreciate that. Thank you very much here today. Well, hope you had a good weekend. Appreciate the blessings of the Lord, and hope you had a good Father's Day, and appreciate God's goodness and God's grace for sure. Well, a couple of things. A lot of people are confused about what the holiday is today. Well, last year, Joe Biden signed legislation into law creating today as a national holiday. And it was today that the Confederacy fell in the state of Texas to the Union forces. And so that's why, it's not today, it was yesterday. And that's why they call it the 19th of June. Juneteenth is what they call it. And so it became a local celebration in Texas. If you want reality, the Texas falling, while that may have been the last Southern stronghold, that did not end slavery. A lot of people thought that it did, but it didn't. You see, history has a way of only telling one side of the story. History is usually written by the victors in conflict. And therefore, the victors try to frame everything to suit them. And today, they don't call it a civil war. They call it the rebellion against the Union, the war of rebellion against the Union. Put down the rebellion against the Union. Fact of the matter is that the states that withdrew from the Union did so according to the Constitution. They constitutionally, according to the means that was set forth in the Constitutional Convention, they withdrew from the Union of the United States of America, and those states formed a new country, and it was a group of Confederated States of America, and it was a different country. And so if you actually want to look at the Constitution and you want to look at it constitutionally, the blockade of southern ports and the, you say, well, you know, they fired on Fort Sumter, that they attacked, you know, the South attacked the North. Well, bottom line was that it was illegal to force, it was unconstitutional to force any state that chose to withdraw. Any state could withdraw today. For any reason, according to the Constitution of the United States. It is a voluntary union of 50 sovereign states. Now, I realize the Federalist Papers and many other things have been, there was a war fought over it. There's a whole lot of things. So it's not near as simple as I'm making it, and I get that. But just simply saying. So let's back up just a second. Let's do a little history, okay? So when were the slaves freed? Well, if you were a rebellion state, if you were part of that other country that was formed, the Confederate States of America, beginning with Virginia, and North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, Florida, across Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, and then Texas. And if you were a part of those states, then according to the War Powers Act, slaves were freed on January the 1st, 1863 by Abraham Lincoln under the War Powers Act. In other words, he freed the slaves as a military action against the South. Because without the slaves, they did not have, it would break the back of the farms and all the other things to be able to fight the war. And so that was the justification. It was not a human rights issue at the time Lincoln did it, as much as it was an economic one. It was done to economically hurt the southern states, because that was their engine. That's what drove them. Of course, the slave labor was a big part of the agricultural engine that drove the money to, of course, wage war. So that would be the answer, because it's in parts. Okay, when was that enforced? Well, it was in various times. It was enforced into various times as the different states capitulated. And it was on the 19th of June in 1865 that finally Texas fell. However, that was not the end of slavery. Somebody said, sure it was. The South is whipped. And the answer is no, you're wrong. That is not the end of slavery. Slavery would continue for 6 more months. And somebody said, where? Well, I can tell you where. In the state of Maryland, in West Virginia, in Tennessee, in Kentucky, and in Missouri, it would continue. And you say, how did it continue? Because the War Powers Act did not cover those states, because those states were not originally a part of the new Confederate States of America. So the United States declared war on the Confederate States for pulling out, and because of the War Powers Act, it hurt them economically. Lincoln freed the slaves under the Emancipation Proclamation, which went into effect January the 1st, 1863. It was enforced, meaning that the Texas, one of the last holdouts would have been Texas of the of the Confederate states. And so that was the 19th of June. However, it was not until December of 1865, and I am shooting from memory, it was the 18th of December, 1865, that the 13th Amendment to the United States Constitution was ratified, which outlawed slavery in all of the states that existed and territories at that time. So in other words, the absolute abolition of slavery occurred the 18th of December, 1865. It became against federal law. But the Union states, the Union sympathizing states, somebody said, well, Missouri wasn't a Union state. Well, they were a Union sympathizing state. Abraham Lincoln neither had the power nor the will to free those slave states. Because if he did, he thought it might tip them in favor of the South, the Confederate States of America. So for that reason, he left those in place. So when did slavery officially abolish? It was the Northern states, or the Northern-leaning states, that were the last ones to give up slavery, and they did so because of the 13th Amendment to the Constitution. Now, those are just facts. Now, I may have gotten a date wrong, and I may have got my tongue over my eye tooth and misstated something, but those are still facts, okay? Facts. So what date was slavery abolished in the United States? It took over 2 years. It was a period of over 2 years. And while slavery, and again, slavery was not the issue as much as who determined slavery. That was the issue. Because again, those Northern states retained their slaves, or those Union sympathizing states retained their slaves. As a result of that, you see what I'm saying? It was who has the right. Lincoln had no power to free the slaves in Missouri. He had no power to do that. And by the way, they say slave states, there was slavery in New England. Okay, so there was slavery in New England. There was widespread slavery all through the North. Very common. It's just it was not in the quantity, nor was it in the capacity. Okay, primarily agriculture. The slaves were primarily agrarian. They were primarily brought here for agriculture. And so that was not that prominent in the North. But it was very common, and I can back it up. It was very common in the Northern states to have slaves as nannies, to have slaves as stable guys, to have slaves as people who kept the property, butlers, all those things. Oh, yeah, that was common. And so while you may not have had hundreds in the fields, you had them. And the affluent, the prominent, of course they did. Of course they did. And anybody that tells you otherwise is ill-advised, because they obviously did. But here's one that really gets me. In the 1860 census in Charleston, South Carolina, you had to pay tax on a slave as a property. There were over 1,200 freed African Americans who owned slaves. And someone rebuked me and said, well, that's only because they bought them and set them free. That's not exactly accurate, because buying a slave was an expensive proposition. So what it was, they bought them and worked them, but not in the fields. There were slave services, much like maid services, butlers, gardeners, all those things. The Battery in Charleston, most of those people did not have slave quarters. They did not have the means, you know, whereby to house slaves. And so what they did was they rented them. And the amazing part was that entrepreneurial blacks saw the opportunity to purchase other blacks, African Americans, and work them as in servant roles to the wealthy white class in Charleston. Again, that's one of those facts of history that doesn't fit our narrative very well. But it is a fact. It's one of those stubborn facts, but it is a fact. Blacks owning blacks? Absolutely. Renting them out? Absolutely. It was, and the way they financed them to buy more would be to rent them out, and from the profits they would buy more slaves, and they would rent them out, and the same thing was true. And some of them, there were over 1,200 black slave owners. They were owners, over 1,200 free blacks. 1,200. Yeah. So, again, doesn't fit the narrative. Now, let me give you the final word on that. Slavery was one of the biggest blights on American history. It was wicked. It's wicked now. It was wicked then. It's ever been wicked. And thank God it's gone. Amen? Thank God it's gone. There we go. But I want to say this. In my family were farmers. There's no record of our family ever having enough money to buy hardly a mule, much less a slave. Slaves were, even in that day, very expensive. I've looked. Very expensive. And so my family, as far as I can tell on either side, never owned slaves. But yet somehow, because I have white skin, I'm supposed to in some way feel guilty for that. Well, I don't. I don't. My family did not own slaves. But even if they had of, it was socially acceptable at the time. And if I had time, I would go into the whole idea. Where did the whole concept of slavery come from? And despite what a lot of people, what the movie Roots and other things would try to show you, primarily the African-American slave trade was propagated by African-Americans. They would capture, rather than kill them, they would capture the competing tribes and sell them. And another part of the puzzle that nobody wants to talk about, it was the Muslims, who were some of the biggest slave traders in the world. And the Muslims did slave trade up in Europe, in the Middle East. And by the way, America was not the only. It was far and widespread. It absolutely was. It absolutely was. Europe. Now, did they abolish it before we did? Yes, they did. But it was common in the Middle East. It was common in other parts of the world, and in the developed parts of the world, slavery was an accepted social ill. Okay, and no, I don't justify it by any means. Not by any means. Not under any circumstance. And I've often said this, and people don't like it when I tell you this. You know who the first missionary was out of the United States of America? It was a black preacher. His master freed him and helped, and the church helped fund him and sent him to the islands to try to win the African people to the Lord. So the first American to ever leave American soil wasn't white. He was black. I love it. Sure was. The first American missionary in the history of the United States was a black man who was sent and supported by the church and by his former master and others back to the Caribbean islands to win them to Christ. All right. I don't know that my family were ever slaves. They were called indentured servants. They would sell themselves into slavery, basically. Many died, of course, in the sweatshops of New England and all the other things. There was a whole lot to that. and Scots, Irish. I could keep going. There was a great deal of social ills back in the day. Oh, yeah. And women being sold as objects, just much like an animal, that was done. And so I could keep going with all that, but that's not the intent today. The intent is to explain what Juneteenth is. And Joe Biden created a federal holiday last year. Somebody asked how much it cost the American taxpayer for everybody to be off today. I don't even know. I'd have to look up how many million we got on the payroll. But it's going to be expensive. There's no doubt about that. And no doubt it's going to be an expensive thing. But should we celebrate the end of slavery? We should. Should we do it on the 19th of June? I don't know that that's the right date. I think we celebrate it, you know, every 4th of July. We celebrate it, you know, every Labor Day. We celebrate quite often. But I'm changing the subject, okay, and changing the gears. I want to talk about how do you preserve your estate? How do you preserve an estate? And, of course, let me just say, well, what do you mean preserve it? What's going to happen to it? All right, well, here's what happens. Long-term care in a nursing facility is expensive. It ranges right now, and I haven't checked accurately lately, but I did get a quote not too long ago, and one rest home was $200 a day for a nursing facility, $200 a day. But if you go into a private setting where there's only three or four people, then you're probably talking closer to $10,000 a month. So I think that we could say safely between $6,000 and $10,000 a month is what it costs to keep someone in a nursing facility long term. You can get insurance that will pay portions of it, but Medicare does not pay for it. Okay, it doesn't pay for it. Supplements don't pay for it. You have to buy a specific insurance that pays for nursing home. Now, you say, well, I can't pay that. Well, once an individual's estate, that means everything that they own, is depleted down to $2,500, and that's every dime a person owns in the world, including automobiles, houses, lands, everything, they can have $2,500 in a burial fund, and that's all. Now, you can prepay your burial. You can have $2,500, which is way outdated. It's $6,000, $8,000 to bury somebody, but they still go by the $2,500 burial fund. That's all you can have. Once that takes place, you're declared to be basically indigent. If you are indigent, then not Medicare, but Medicaid steps up. And Medicaid then begins to take and cover your bill. The difference is your Social Security check goes directly to, you know, directly to it goes toward the bill. And then Medicaid pays the difference. Okay? You say, well, what if my grandma goes in the nursing home and she stays 3 years, but she has a house. Medicaid will put a lien against any real property. And that lien will have to be satisfied before that property can be sold or divided. And many times, the stay in the rest home at $6,000 a month, the $10,000 a month, eats up the value in the home, and it's gone. So in other words, the lien against the house is more than the house is worth. And it's sold and Medicare takes the loss. That's how it works. So, preacher, what can we do to protect the assets? Well, first of all, I think that we need to be responsible. I think that we need to plan ahead. I think that we need to be prudent in matters. And so, well, preacher, I'm going to go through some scenarios with you. I've got basically five things that that you can do, okay? Someone says, well, I've got a will, and I've willed everything I've got to my children. Well, so you know, a will does not protect you against Medicaid taking your home. Well, I've given it to my children. Yeah, but wills don't go into effect until you die. So only after you die, and even when you die, the purpose of probate and the purpose of an executor is to settle the estate. So if you had a nursing home bill of $200,000 and the house sold for $175,000, you would still owe $25,000 after the house. See what I'm saying? So wills are not at all effective against that. So a will is no good until you die. And when you die, the will activates immediately. But what you accrued, the medical bills, whatever it is, what you accrued from the time you got sick till the time you die is on the inheritance. So before they can inherit one penny, they've got to settle the debt. It has to be posted in the paper. Everybody gets to file against the estate. And what's left over, the kids get split according to how you set it. But a will alone does nothing to avoid Medicaid from taking your home in the event of catastrophic illness or long-term care. Somebody said, well, what else could I do? Well, you could deed it over. So the will doesn't work. Okay, it's not going to protect it at all because they're going to sue the estate. It's going to be against the estate. So a person can go ahead and change the deed. If it's paid for, you can change your deed. And you can go ahead now and give your children whatever you'd like for them to have. Now, that works to a point, but there's a couple of caveats. There's a couple of drawbacks. If you give it to your kids, what if something happens to one of your kids? Well, then it goes to their kids, to their wife or their kids. And the question is, would they let you continue to live there? So would you continue to have a safe place to be if it was handed down one or two generations? What if there was a car wreck, a tragic car wreck, and your son, your daughter-in-law, and your kids got killed? Now what happens? Well, it goes to their heirs. And so you'd have to go back through the ladder, and it would go back around. Understand what I'm saying is that most of the time it wouldn't, but it could. And I have known of situations, and God forbid this would ever happen to anyone, but I've known of situations to where the house was signed over and mom or dad got thrown out of their own house by the children, but not usually by the children. It's the grandchildren that'll do it. They throw them out of their own house. Seriously. And they had no place to go. That's when you sign the deeds over. Okay? But let me explain this to you. There is a 5-year look back. It's up to 5 years. And what that means is, unless you have a qualifying disabled child living in the home, they can't touch it. But if you give your children the house, they can still go back for 5 years and put mortgage on that same house. They can. They can go back on the kids. They can go back on you for 5 years, 60 months. So if you live 60 months after you sign the deed, they're free and clear. Nobody can go back on you. But if something happens to you within those 60 months, they can go back on it, and they can reverse what you did and they're still liabilities. So I'm just going to give it to them. You can't give it to them. You can't sell it to them. You can't do anything to them. They can now go back 5 years. The government can go back 5 years and take your house and freeze assets of the kids, you know, of their house. You know, well, so I sold it. They can't get what I sold. No, but then they freeze your assets. The IRS, the Medicare, they go in, Medicaid go in, and they freeze your assets. So you owe them the proceeds. You owe them, even if mama gives it to you, you still owe them fair market value for that house on the date it was sold. You do. I promise you I'm telling you the truth. So that's not necessarily going to work very well. There's a third way. So willing it, that don't work at all. Second one, you can deed it over now. But there's 5 years that the clock ticks. And that transaction's not safe until 5 years has expired. The third way, it's called a life estate. Now, I like very much the life estate more than I do the deed thing. And the reason is that gives the person who signs it over, it gives them the legal right to remain in their home. I don't care what somebody said. You can't get them out of their home. A life estate is a transaction. You sell it, give it, whatever. But that transaction hangs in limbo. And the moment the person dies, boom, it's done. It's like a closing that happens on the moment that the person dies. So the person that's receiving it, it's not really theirs. They can't borrow money on it. They can't do anything with it. They can't dispose of it. They can't do anything with it. As long as the person that gave them the life estate is alive, this guarantees grandma a place to live. But once again, on a life estate, there is a 5-year look back. So you can't put grandma in the rest home today and then get her to sign a life estate and everything's hunky-dory. It's not the way it works. They can go back for 5 years. And they can put a lien against that house or against the assets. They can track those assets. They can put the lien against the assets that came from that house. So again, there's that 5-year look back. Okay, so that's not foolproof. So let's review. A will, that's not at all foolproof. I mean, that when we know don't work, okay? Because that's only at death, and all the expenses will be accrued up until death. Secondly, you can deed it over. But if you deed it over, there's a 5-year look back. And grandma doesn't have a place to live, possibly. Number three, there's a life estate. Life estate gives grandma the right to stay in her home until she dies. No matter who she gives it to, there's a right to stay in the home. The problem with it is there's a 5-year look back on that. So it puts the house, it ties it up. And bottom line up, really, there's not a lot they can do with that one, especially once it transacts. But even if it's past 5 years, no, it shows up as no asset. In other words, she has the right to live there. But it, for the purposes of being indigent, it doesn't qualify as a permanent asset. So you still would qualify for Medicaid. Okay? I think I said that there were five. Actually, there's only four that are going to be going to qualify. So let me give you the one that don't qualify. Okay. There's what's called a 99-1. With a 99-1, whoever it is, the children, let's just say children, mom is selling the house to the children, and she sells them 1% of the house. And she sells it to them that they get 1% of the house. And there has to be a closing. And you have to bring 1% of the tax value to the lawyer's office and pay them. And the closing cost and the recording fees and all that. And that puts the heir owning 1% of the house. Now, if you write it up, a phrase called tenant in common. Let's say that you got five kids, and the five kids buy 1% of the house. So they each pay 1/5 of 1%. And you go to closing and they do it. But when they do it, they say, now look, if something happens to me, the kids say, if something happens to me, I want my kids to get my part. That's called a tenant in common. That means it passes to the descendants. Well, here's the problem with that one. While they can't go after that 1%, it's true, but they can't go after the 99% because that's an asset and there's value there because it stays in the line and it stays with the family. Does that make any sense? It's their that piece of that pie. So if you got, let's just go with two kids. You got two kids, and mom is going to do a 99-1. She's going to put both the two kids on. They're going to come up with 0.5% each, a half of 1% each. And they're going to split the closing cost, and they're going to split the lawyer cost and the recording fee. And so they come to closing, and they put up whatever it is, a couple thousand dollars each. Then they own half of 1% of the house, and they need to pay half of 1% of the property taxes. They need to pay half of 1% of the maintenance. They need to pay half of 1% of the upkeep of the house. But if it's written as tenant in common, then if one of those children die, it goes to their children. That one does not avoid. And we say the rest home takes it, but the truth of the matter is it's not the rest home that takes it. It's Medicaid that takes it. Yeah, they will take it. Well, depending, okay? So it depends. They can put a lien against it. The rest home can put a lien against it, and of course. But bottom line, if you do tenants in common, then it's just like selling them a portion of it, and that does not exempt you at all. However, there is one other way. If you do a 99-1, and you do joint tenancy, and you add the phrase with right or survivorship. What that means is that if you have two kids and mom, and she gives it to the two children, I mean, she puts them in, they buy that part, they buy 1% of the house. And if you have joint tenancy with right or survivorship, something happens to mom, now the two children have it half and half. But if something happens to one of those children, now the other children has it completely. The other child has it completely. Doesn't pass down the line. It doesn't inherit. In other words, it's a piece of pie, and we're going to cut a pie in three pieces. And if one person doesn't want any pie, now we're going to cut it in half. And then if that person doesn't want any pie, we're going to have a whole pie. That works. And because of that, because of right or survivorship and joint tenancy, it ties it up. And so there's no value there, no inheritable value. Am I making any sense at all? Basically, let's say three of us go together and buy a car. And our agreement is that when we buy this car, now if something happens to me, you two get to keep it. And we go, okay, that's good. Three of us buy a car. Something happens to me. So something happens to me. Now the two of them get to keep it. Well, and our agreement is whoever survives, they get to keep it. Well, then when the next one dies, the final one, they get to keep the whole car. They get to keep all of it because we had right of survivorship with a joint tenancy clause. Okay. Can you do that? Yes, you can. It's not that expensive. I will say this. If you are considering it, you might want to move pretty quickly because it is one of those legal loopholes, and it might already be closed in some states. There are places that already it's not legal. So check with your local state and see. But I can tell you that in North Carolina, it is legal right now. How much longer it'll be legal, I don't know. But it is legal right now. Somebody said, well, preacher, which one would you do? Well, there's a whole lot of things about it. Number one, how old are you? Like, if you're the one that's got the property, how old are you? Number two, what kind of health are you in? Yeah. Number three, what's your estate worth? Has a lot to do with it. It really does. What's your estate worth? Has a lot to do with it. Now, somebody said, well, now, wait a minute, preacher, there's another way. And there is. And that is to take all of your assets, to divest yourself of all your assets, and put it in a trust. And trust can be worded and written in so many different ways. To start talking about trust would take months, okay, because there's so many different ways of doing them. But I will say this. A will controls your assets until you die. Once you die, they're divided according to the will, and that's it. If a person wants to take all of their inheritance, buy ping pong balls and drop them in the French Broad, that's on them. You can't do one thing about that. Okay? With a trust, you can control your estate after you die. Sure you can. You can control who controls it. You can control what the allotments are and who decides how much the allotment is and how much they get. You can decide all of those things. Most rich people live out of trust funds. And the bottom line of a trust fund is it's no longer personal property. You don't own it. You don't own your house. The trust owns your house. You don't own your car. The trust owns your car. You don't own your money in the bank. The trust owns the money in the bank. You don't own it. Now, you can certainly still write the trust in such a way where you control it while you're alive, and then you can put stipulations on it when you die. And there is large estates that can never be sold because you would have to have everybody that's a part of the trust agree to sell it. And unless they all agree to sell it, it cannot be sold. So trusts are a whole nother thing way out there that's completely separate. They're typically complicated. They're expensive to set up. And you got to have a good lawyer, because if you get a bad one, it can ruin you. I mean, it can really mess you up. I know people that have gotten voted out of their own trust. And when your kids vote you out, you're out, if that's the way you wrote it up. So therefore, you have to really think about it. So, bottom line, what do we do? Okay, let's just review. Number one, a will. A will does nothing to protect your estate. A will is for what you have left after the estate is settled. So all medical bills, all claims are satisfied first, and then the kids get what's left. That's all. Secondly, you can deed it over to them now. But remember, it doesn't guarantee you a place to live. Secondly, they can go back on them for 5 years. 5 years. There's a 5-year look back. You can do what's called a life estate. A life estate guarantees you a place to live. It does transfer ownership, but only when you die. But you have control until you get there. And it's actually filed on your deed. So it's something that's actually filed. You can go look and see if there's a life estate on a piece of property. Yeah. So life estates are better. But again, 5-year look back. So not the, you know, and if you're in bad health, then that's probably not the route for you to go. There's the 99-1. 99-1, mom retains, grandma retains ownership of the house and sells 1% of it to the children. And then the children, they buy that. And then if you put it in joint tenancy with right of survivorship, then what that means is that, yeah, they can't touch that. The problem is that also means that that estate, that house, keeps going to the last one living. Now, can you have it changed after mom dies? You could. You know, you could. But will you? And will everybody be agreeable to that? Because everybody's got to agree. So you'd have to take, you'd have to switch it from a joint tenancy to a tenant in common somewhere in the line after mom's gone. Yeah, you'd have to. And then finally, there is the trust. And trust would be by far the best, provided that the state's large enough and that you can afford it and that you have somebody that really knows what they're doing when they set up a trust. It's a little aggravating because everything has to be signed. You're a trustee. You're no longer the owner of your house. You're a trustee of the trust. And everything has to be done according to the rules that you lay out. And you have to obey them. Even you have to obey the own rules that you lay out. Okay, that's five things I told you I'd give you. And then there's two things that you need to have. And you need to have it on your parents, older parents. Parents, you need to have it. Give it to your kids. You need to give them medical power of attorney. And if you trust them, you need to give them regular power of attorney, financial power of attorney, where they can do business when you can't. They can sign your name, they can access your funds, and they can take care of you with your own money and with your estate. And again, medical power of attorney. And by all means, to some degree, husbands and wives are already kind of automatically protected. You could do it. I did it. I have medical power of attorney. My wife has medical power of attorney. She also has financial power of attorney. And so rather than me have to sign a check to put in the bank, she can sign my name. It's legal. Okay, she can do that because she has financial power of attorney. So she can transact business as if it were me. But as mom and dad get older, as grandpa and grandma get older, somebody needs to be able to conduct business. Because here's what happens. If you don't have that, and they get to where they cannot care for themselves, and they don't want to be cared for, you will have to go to court, get them declared incompetent. A deputy will have to come out to the house, serve them papers declaring them incompetent by a judge. Very serious. And then and only then will you have access to the funds to put them in the rest home or to do anything else. And even then, you got to go through the clerk of court to do it. It's not a pretty picture. So I said, preacher, you're just full of bad news today. Well, I got news for you. We're going to die. Everybody listening to the sound of my voice is going to die unless we get changed in a moment in the twinkling of an eye. So either way, we're going to stand before God, number one. Number two, the things of this earth, we're going to leave them behind. Somebody's going to get it. Antichrist, so somebody's going to get it. Okay? Somebody's going to get what we got. Does that bother you? Does that concern you? If so, then you need to take some preparations. Okay? All right. Just want to make sure that everybody's got, they're on the right page and on the same page of music here. Make sure that you are. Now, we're going to download this program so that you can point other people to it. It'll be under Drive Time. It'll be on the app. You can go to Drive Time, today's date, and you'll be able to pick this up, 6/20/22, and you can pick this up, okay? If you need more notes. I don't have notes that I can print. I mean, I could. I go home, type some stuff, but And by the way, I'm giving pastoral advice. I'm not a lawyer. So what I'm telling you is not a substitute for legal advice. I'm a pastor. I'm giving pastoral counsel and pastoral advice. Okay? I'm not a doctor. I got two doctor's degrees, but I'm not a medical doctor. I'm not a lawyer. What I got was honorary, and I'm not a lawyer, and what I'm telling you is pastoral advice for the purpose to make you think and get you to seek professional counsel along these matters. Okay? All right. Good enough. All right. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Let me go in right quick. And Okay. All right. So this was earlier. We had someone on 280 at the vegetable stand. Looked like first responders were there. And sorry. Yesterday was June 13th, or Juneteenth, which was June 19th. Today is the official day it's being celebrated, one of the Monday holidays. Okay. I don't know what somebody's asking. There's a lot of liberals publicizing their positive test of COVID. Are they trying to make it socially acceptable? I don't know, but let me tell you what I found out. COVID's on the rise again, particularly among kids. Yep. Bible schools, camps, these are the culprits. Hear me? And it's the BA2 variant, probably. So very seriously. Very, very seriously. Everybody's wanting to act like it's not happening. It is happening. Trust me, it is happening. Someone says, everybody said it was 10 years. Nope, not 10 years. Five. 60 months. There's a 60-month look back. Okay, that I know. Okay. Trusts, there's privacy features. There's a lot of things you can do with a trust, but again, you got to have enough to make it worth it, number one, because it spends a lot of money setting it up. Number two, if you set it up wrong, changing them is hard. It's very hard to change it. Even for you change your own trust, it's hard to change because it costs you all over again. Okay? So, yeah. And my medical team is saying, don't forget living wills. I've got a document here somewhere. I don't know where it's at. It's called The Will to Live. It is a living will. And it says this: I want everything that's possible, period. And I want my family to have the final say. That's what I've got. Okay? I don't want a doctor. I don't want an insurance company. I don't want a hospital system making my decisions. I want my family to make my decisions, okay? But I want everything there is until my family says stop. Somebody said, well, if I'm not viable, or if I'm not this, listen to me. I have done CPR on people who are not viable just because the family asked me to. I'm telling you that sometimes we do what we do for the family, not for the victim. And so I'm not a big advocate of living wills in that. If this happens, this happened, this automatically happened. Well, what if my family is not ready for that to happen? You see what I'm saying? So I think stating I want everything all the way until my family says otherwise, at that point, I'm good with them. But now I'm going to tell you something. I've seen some living wills get in the way of the wishes of families. And that was not the intention of the person who did it, but I watched it do it. And I have wished that every one of them in the world was squatted up and burned, okay? Because I saw what trauma it puts a family through. You can voice your opinions. You can tell your family. You can do written instructions, a variety of things. But I'm talking about if you have a legal document, then you need to make sure your family is good with what you put on it. Can I say it that way? But always give your family, name them who they are, in this order. They're the ones that get to make the decisions. Okay? Now, and my family knows, when I'm done, I want out of here. Don't do anything extraordinary to keep me here. I want out of here. God's through with me. I want out. I'm through. I'm finished. I won't leave. So please don't. Please don't. Please don't. Please don't keep me here past when I ought to be here. Okay? Yeah. Yeah. And my family knows that. But again, my family makes the decision. So be very, very careful in signing medical power of attorneys, or not medical power of attorney, well, that too, but living wills. They can be a blessing, they can be a curse. Somebody said, yeah, but they keep the family from having to make the hard decisions. I get that. I do, and that's one of the pros for them. One of the cons is I've seen living wills carried out, and the family weren't ready for it. And it was bad. So, okay? All right. Thank you so much. God bless you. Appreciate it very, very much. And so if you have not, if you've got one hanging, look at it this way. It's better to fix it today. I mean, you say, well, we didn't have it yesterday, but it's better to fix it today. But if you say, well, I don't think there's 5 years out in front of us. I don't think it's going to be that long before either they have to be going to a nursing facility or before they die, then you're going to have to look at one of these short-term solutions, you know, because the other ones are out, they're not in play anymore. The life estate's not in play. The switching of the deeds is not in play. The will's certainly not in play. So what? Well, you have a trust and you have the 99-1. It's about all you got left. But even when you do the 99-1, you got to have joint tenancy with the right of survivorship in order for them to leave it alone. So, well, I don't ever want my parents to have to go there. I don't either. But at the same time, I don't want my wife to have to care for me if I don't know my name. And maybe she can't care for me. Her health won't allow it. Last thing I want to be in a rest home. But I don't control that. So to say, don't put me there no matter what. Make me promise, don't put me there no matter what. What if I don't know who I am? You see what I'm saying? And she can't care for me. Then she's going to have to do that. So once again, you got to have some human decision in this. And again, if not done correctly, take everything you got. Yeah, everything you got. So, yeah, the governor of North Carolina is positive. About that. I bet he caught it from Fauci. Who are you going to bet? They're buddies. I bet they was drinking out of the same saucer. Who are you going to bet? Maybe the same communion cup. I don't know. But, yeah, that may be what it was. Don't know. All right, got to go. Thank you for being with us. Thank the Lord for his mercy. And thank the Lord for his grace. And, again, appreciate you being with us here this afternoon. Let's pray. Father, in the name of the Lord Jesus, I pray for those that have COVID today. God, would you comfort them, touch them. Lord, would you heal them. I pray for those that are sick in mind, sick in body, Lord, sick in spirit. Lord, I pray that you'd redeem the lost. Lord, that you'd draw back the backslid. Most of all, Lord, that you would get glory to yourself. And Lord, our plans are to leave in the rapture. But Lord, if you don't come for us, then Lord, I pray you'd help us to be wise as serpents, harmless as doves. And Lord, please help us not to leave our families in a bind. Lord, we plead the blood and pray these things in Christ's name. Amen. And amen. Thank you so much for being on board. I'm Pastor Randy Barton. Until we meet again, whether on the air or in the air, may God richly bless you is our prayer.